Welcome to class today. Is my microphone on? Is my microphone on? Yes? No? Okay, all right. Let's dive in by talking a little about what just happened since we last met. So we graded your in-class quizzes and distributed those back to you. If you haven't found them yet, they are on the progress site. You will be able to see scans of your quizzes and what we thought you did and possibly some comments. If you didn't take it, of course, you won't see it there, but you will be able to see we also posted the quiz and an example key. There are more than one way of keying this, so we did some of that. We're going to talk a little bit about that example key today. Also, I received an average of an email every 25 minutes or so of people that have reasons why something went wrong with this last week's quizzes. And I couldn't deal with that level of volume, so we just waived last week's quizzes. So they were hopefully a learning exercise. They will not count towards your grade. And we will add some more exercises that deal with those sorts of things in coming quizzes as well. Let's look briefly at the example key, and let me say a few things that need saying as we were going through and grading this. First, there's more than one way of doing things, and a lot of you did pretty well. There were certainly some hiccups and some glitches and so on. This first one, we mostly just got right. Some people had it backwards, but that's fine. Second one, also pretty good. We understood that and means and there were two clauses here. And then we get to, if you're a performer or on the staff, you can come in early or on time. Now, we've got a couple of ors here. Are they inclusive or exclusive? How do you decide? This is something there appears to be no consensus among the students about. So we decided in our grading it to basically just ignore that distinction because apparently we hadn't taught it well enough yet. When you want to write an or, you should always ask yourself, is it okay for them both to be true? If the answer is yes, use an inclusive or. If the answer is no, use an exclusive or. Is it okay for a staff to be a performer? You could actually argue this is an ambiguity in English, whether staff are allowed to perform or not. Can you be both early and on time? Not unless you arrive twice. Okay, there are ways of understanding the English and ways that make this slightly ambiguous. If you see some sort of ambiguity like that, document it, write it down so we'll know what you're thinking. But in general, we should expect an exclusive or if you couldn't do both, inclusive if the sentence doesn't tell us we couldn't or English doesn't tell us we couldn't. Number four, we had more trouble. It was more complicated. This was not surprising. First, let me talk about this symbol. About 20% of you wrote this symbol wrong. Now, does that matter? It matters because it will make you look foolish if you write it wrong in your real life and somebody sees you write it wrong. Like, who educated you? So you're going to learn to write it right. It looks like this. Practice it if you got it wrong. There are several things known about it. The direction, the most common way to get it wrong was to write backwards. A fair number of people also made the tail as long as or longer than the dash. It should be a short little tail. That is perhaps less important, but nonetheless. So there's that. Also, we have here a fair number of people had some trouble with I've never met a giant. It was fairly common to just put it in where it belonged and where it showed up in the English. This is not qualifying. If you put the I have not met a giant inside that first clause, then having met a giant renders the whole thing invalid. Okay? This is a parentheticals go outside at the end. Some of you left off the parentheses. We said you don't need to know the operator precedence. Use parentheses. If you don't use the parentheses, we will apply the operator precedence that is officially around, which is and happens first. And that will not be what you meant to say in this particular instance or most instances. So use parentheses if you have multiple operators, and it will make your life easier. The one thing we do expect you to know is that not happens before everything else. And so we will just put knots without parentheses fairly often. Also, can you be both a midget and a giant? Probably not. I suppose, technically, like, there are genetic biological conditions that cause you to be titled midgets or giants, and you could theoretically have them both. But in general, we use them in this more loose sense, and you couldn't be both. So exclusive or is probably more accurate than inclusive or. Yeah? Oh, that was a problem. I should fix the key. I should have used different letters. Yes, that makes the key wrong, using the same letter twice. Shouldn't do that. Thank you. Other thoughts, comments, questions about this so far? All right. The code. Under what conditions does the code return 3? Never. So few of you got that right, and you wrote such complicated things for 3 instead that we just didn't even bother grading it. But it turns out that there is no way of getting to this third one. You can verify it in the truth table or the like if you want. You can run the code and see if you can prove it that way too. There is no way of getting 3. And the way we write that in logic is with false, a bottom symbol. Although we would have also accepted never happens or anything like that as well. A lot of you for 6 had the negation of this and this. Or the negation of this and this, however you want to think about it. It turns out that the negation of one is the other, so either and or both was okay, because they were the same thing. So there was a simpler version than many of you gave, but this was the basic idea here. Questions about this? And then the truth table, it mostly did pretty well. There were some glitches, shall we say, but mostly, most people were reasonable at doing the truth table. We had some people that got an operator backwards or picked the wrong variable and so forth, but mostly this worked out. So, any questions about the in-class quiz? Okay, and we'll have another one. Coming up on Friday. I have it drafted, but my TAs are still making some comments about how to clarify it and make it easier for you to read for the practice in particular. So I haven't posted the practice yet. I hope to do that in the next few hours so that you'll have that to look at before we get to the quiz. All right. Any other thoughts, comments, questions before we dive into the bulk of our activities for today? All right. We're going to talk about how to prove things are equivalent. And I have so many links here. So I have a variety of different things that we can talk about as we go along. But let me actually start with the last one. Because I realized as I was reading over the material I already had early this morning that I was missing some things, and so I added a little bit. Some of this is also in our textbooks, but I wanted to sort of summarize. First, axiom. The word axiom means something we take as true without proof. Okay? There are axioms in all kinds of different logical and mathematical and scientific space. We just assume it is true. Right? For example, an axiom of modern physics is that the laws of physics don't change. We don't have any proof that they won't. We don't have any proof that gravity won't stop tomorrow. We just accept it as axiomatic that gravity will be the same tomorrow it was today. Okay? There are lots of things you just assume as true without proof. And so in logic, we start with some axioms. You could argue these are definitions. You could argue they are things you just assume. There's different ways of wording how this works. And some of them actually can be derived from different axioms. But we could take, for example, double negation, that not means nothing. We could just say we just assume that's true. We aren't proving it to you, we're just assuming it is true. Axioms and usually a few things that we can derive from some axioms together turn into what we sometimes call proof rules, individual steps we use. And we talked about some of those in class on Monday. We talked about how we could simplify and change information. Those are proof rules, which I presented as axioms. These are just things we accept as true. Now, with those steps, there's two basic kinds of what we call direct proof. By direct proof, we mean just do Boolean arithmetic and algebra until you get the answer. Don't do anything fancy. We will learn plenty of fancy things as the semester progresses. We're going to start with just how to use Boolean algebra to get where you're going. The two main types of these are equivalences and entailments. We're going to focus primarily on equivalences today, but I do want to have an idea that both exist because sometimes they'll both be valuable. An equivalence means two expressions always have the same truth as each other. And we talked about this a lot on Monday. We showed you some equivalences. Okay? So if A is true anytime B is true, and A is false anytime B is false, then A and B are equivalent. And the main way we directly prove new equivalences is by applying our axiomatic equivalences one at a time to get to the new equivalents. Okay? There's some other things that are worth noting. Saying that A and B are equivalent is the same thing as saying that A by implies B is always true. There are two ways of saying the same idea. So there's a direct relationship between by implication and equivalence. An equivalence is an assertion, where a by implication is an expression. If that expression was always true, then the assertion held. We also have some special terminology we'll just mention briefly here, come back to more later. Anything that's equivalent to true is called a tautology, and anything that's equivalent to false is called a contradiction. Both of these terms will be valuable later on. We will come back to them. We're not going to spend a lot of time on them. Questions about equivalences before we move on to entailments? Okay. Entailments, A entails B, also written with three lines, but one of them is vertical. A entails B means that A's truth is sufficient to demonstrate B's truth, but not the other way around. So when A is true, I know B is true, but I don't know that B being true makes A true, or that A being false makes B false. Okay? So we have this idea of an entailment. Entailment, if we think about equivalence as being like by implication, entailment is like implication. Oh, I have the wrong symbol there. That should be A entails. Sorry. A entails B, and A implies B is true are the same thing. Okay? And that is very confusing that I have twice. I have this equivalence that should be an entailment. I will change that after class. Sorry. So if that's an entailment, then this sentence would be true. Okay? So this is a one-way thing. If you know A, you can derive B. This is actually the most common thing we want to do in proofs. Usually, we want to show that something that is easy to determine proves something that is hard to determine, and we don't care about going the other direction. So we'll actually do more entailment proofs than equivalence proofs going forward, but we're going to start with equivalence proofs because they're going to be a little bit more straightforward to deal with. We have a list of axioms of these. We talked about that some last time. I also want to talk a little bit about how you go about proving things. I'm going to talk about three basic things to think about. Look where you are, find out what pieces could fit, and then pick one that seems most likely to help. Okay? Creating a direct proof, especially at the lower level of detail we'll start with today, is going to feel a little bit like trying to solve some sort of puzzle. Okay? You're going to say, okay, I am sitting here in my proof, I've gotten this far, where do I go next? If you say, well, what do I know? Here are the things I have known. Anything that I have gotten to in my proof, I know that. Okay? Typically, I'm going to proceed from the last thing I know, but sometimes I made a dead end and want to back up. Okay? So I'm going to think about what do I know, and then when I think about what I know, the next thing I want to say is, which axioms fit? There are some axioms, like double negation, I can always use. But there's others that are dependent upon the particular operator in question. So if we consider this thing I know, P and not P or Q, then I could do double negation anywhere I want, but the operators I have are an AND and an OR. So I could distribute the AND over the OR, or I could apply the definition and implication to the OR, and I could also rearrange. I could move where things are using the associative properties. Sorry, distributive, the commutative properties. But that's sort of the set I have to pick from. So you look where you are, say what is allowed here. Consulting a list of axioms might be useful there. What am I allowed to do from here? And then you want to pick the one that makes you go most progress. Here are four things to think about there. The first one hopefully is obvious. Don't undo what you did. Don't go backwards. Hey, if your next step would lead you someplace you've already been, try something else. In general, because most of our axioms are about ands and ors, turn everything to ands and ors, work with those, and then change the back at the end if you need to. Okay, so turning everything to ands and ors first is almost always a good step. If you have ands and need ors, or have ors and need ands, De Morgan's law is the thing that does that, that changes ands to ors. De Morgan's law needs some nots, though, which can be created with double negation. So you've got an AND, you need an OR, use double negation, create some NOTs, De Morgan's to change your ANDs to ORs. And similar if you have some ORs, you need some ANDs. And then implication comes from disjunctions. You get disjunctions from potentially double negation on top of a conjunction. And you may also need a double negation to make that first term be negated. So these are sort of things you think about as you're moving forward. How do I turn everything to ANDs and ORs? Use my rules to make things work. When none of those apply, either pick something that makes your formula as different as you can, so that you'll have a new set of places to work with, or something that simplifies your formula. Simplification is almost always a good move. Okay? And so I have here a full worked out proof, and then we'll do some more live as we move forward. So I'm trying to prove that P and P implies Q is equivalent to P and Q. And so, given this initial state, my first step is to turn it to ands and ors. Because implications just have fewer rules for it. So I'm going to try to turn it to ands and ors first. So I take the implication and turn it into an or. Now I have this new statement. Okay? And we just listed the various things I could do. I could apply double negations and so forth. But what I want in the end is P and Q. So I could try double negation to turn my OR into an AND, but I also have an AND right here that I could maybe distribute. And you could try them both out and see where they go, but one of the things I see about distribution is that that will cause me to have a P and Q term. And P and Q is what I'm trying to get. That looks like the goal. Let's try that. So I distribute. And now I see I have something that can be simplified. P and not P is just false. When I can simplify, I almost always do. So just turn my P and not P into false, because you can't have P and not P. And then I turn false or something into just that other thing, and ta-da, I was done. Most proofs won't be quite this short. But this is the idea. One step at a time, what am I allowed to do from here? Which one seems like it'll bring me in the right direction? And you can't go seriously awry. If you try the wrong thing, you'll end up with something that's still equivalent to where you started, and so there will still be an approach, a path from there to your goal. So it may be a little longer than it would otherwise need to be, but it's safe to just try something as long as everything you try is an actual equivalent. Thoughts, comments, questions about any of these ideas? Okay, so I have some other things written here, okay? There is a reading in each of our textbooks about this. The Mathematics or Computer Sciences textbook has a very short write-up, like a page. The For All X textbook has three more chapters beyond this, but has multiple chapters talking about the philosophy and how it feels to do it and so forth, if you want a little bit more about it. We have our list of equivalences, Okay, the set of all things that could be turned into things. We talked about that last time. I have a longer example proof that we did, okay, of a particular rule that you could play around with, and I talk sort of about how I go about it. There's a write-up about different proof techniques that has another example and talks a little about how you'd turn this into English when you're done, which we aren't going to be doing this week for the quiz. And then we have what we just looked at. My hope is that between these several different ways of talking about them, they'll start to sort of click. And so I'm planning to use class to do a yet another way. So you have as many different ways of thinking about this as you can moving forward. Before I do that, let's just make sure things are sinking in. Turn to where we're sitting here and try to describe briefly how we go about proving an equivalence. If that happens quickly, you might also try describing the difference between an equivalence and an entailment. With doing some example proofs. Okay, let's do some example proofs. I'm just going to show a few example equivalence proofs, and then I'm happy to pause, talk about things. If you have particular things you want me to do, we can do that as well. And then we'll spend a little bit of time in the end to talk about some other notation that you may encounter in your life. And that is the plan for today. So let's start fairly straightforward-ish, I don't know. Let's say I want to show that A implies B is equivalent to, and then I'm gonna, this is gonna be a little long, but it's gonna be an opportunity to talk about the things I'm going to do multiple steps along the way. I want to prove that A implies B is equivalent to A and B, or not A and not B. Now, this is a long thing for it to be equivalent to. And when I'm faced with a proof like this, I would suggest first doing one of those habits of highly mathematical people we talked about a couple weeks ago. Create examples and counterexamples. You don't need to create a full truth table, but just try out something. Pick under values of A and B and see if you agree with this. Do you think this is likely to be true? That process of trying examples will give you some intuition about what's going on and help you think more clearly about what's happening. So take a moment, just pick some examples, see what happens, maybe compare with your neighbor, see if they picked a different example, then we'll proceed. Thank you. All right, has anybody found a counterexample? Did I write this wrong? Does anybody disagree with this equivalence? Okay, we like it. Great. There's always a chance I'll get it wrong. Okay, any questions before I start trying to prove it? All right, I'm just going to try plowing ahead and see how far I can get. So, I start with, let's say, okay, I've got A implies B. There's only one rule I can use. I only have one rule for an expression that contains just an implication. I have to do this. It is the only option available. Okay? Great. Now what? I have a disjunction, I have a negation. And I need a whole lot of things. So many things. How am I supposed to get so many things? So, let's think about what rules we have available. Let's look at our list of equivalences. All right, so we're just literally going to go down and figure out which ones can apply. I can always use the backwards of these first two. So I can always add a double negation or add an and true or an or false. It's usually not useful to do that, but I always can. Amongst these simplifications, the ones that would go forward, I have an or. And so I'm in this column and I'm not in any of those four cases. Okay. Now again, I might be able to go backwards to turn my p into p and p, for example. Should be an odd thing to do, but maybe a way of getting multiple things together. But this is what I have available to me. And then I have these other more complicated ones, and I don't think I'm in any of these positions, except the definition of implication, which I just used and don't want to use backwards. Ugh! What am I to do? None of them appear to apply. Okay. Well, I know I need and sometime. So maybe I could do something with double negation. Let's just try adding a double negation in front of this whole thing. And the reason I'm doing a double negation is to get ready for De Morgan's law. To turn ors into ands, I use De Morgan's law. To use De Morgan's law, I need a not. To create a not, I use double negation. Okay? Now, as I'm going along, in order to understand what I'm doing and error check what I'm going to do, I'm going to also write down something that tells me what rule I used. I used a definition to get to this second line. I used double negation to get to this line. Okay? And then I'm going to use De Morgan's law next, because that's why I did it. So I'm going to use De Morgan's law to do my next thing. De Morgan's law says the not of an or can be turned into the and of nots. So I'm going to keep the first not out there. We're going to turn that inner not and move it inside and make an and. Okay? And then I can simplify using double negation to make this be A and not B, which isn't any of the four terms I needed. No! Okay. So before I keep going, though, let me just see, are there questions about my approach, how I'm going things, how I'm picking things, how I'm trying to explore? All right. What can I do from here? Well, I can apply De Morgan's law again, but if I do, I'll end up back where I started. That's not useful. I could use the commutative property to move things around. Also not hugely useful. I've sort of like run out of things to do without making it more complicated. Okay? Which is awkward. The first example I'm doing in class, we're already stuck. What could I do? Yes?
Is there a reason that you're not starting from the other side?
That's a great question. Let's try starting from the other side, shall we? You can start either direction. Equivalence goes both directions. You can start from the other side. So let's just, poof, we're now starting from the other side. We're just going to give up on this. We're going to keep it, because maybe we'll end up meeting one of these things halfway. Maybe we'll start from the other side. Before I do this, how should I pick which side to start from? Yeah.
So in this particular case, I would have chosen the right side to start from after using the definition of truncation.
Because?
Because the right side has a lot more terms, and it's generally easier to work with many terms and get them simplified and down to one or a few than to take one and expand that out to many.
Yeah. In general, there's only a handful of ways to simplify, but an arbitrary number of ways of adding complexity. And so often simplifying is easier, and so starting with the more complex to go to the less complex will make your life a little easier. Not always. We haven't yet seen that it will be any easier. But we can dream, right? We can hope that it will be easier. So here I have this. Now what? Yeah. What set of rules can I use? Why don't you take a moment, feel free to work with somebody else if you want, look over our list of rules, or if you have some memorized, what is available for us to use? And ideally, pick one you think might be useful. Considering. Yeah. Okay, so I have the commutative property. Other rules I should consider. Yeah. I have De Morgan. Other rules I should consider. Yeah. I have the distributive property. Other rules I should consider. Yeah. Sorry?
Identity.
Okay. Other rules I should consider?
Double negation.
If I keep doing this, will you eventually get all of the rules? Let's just pause here. We have five. Let's just do a quick vote. And then I'll talk about how I will make a decision. We won't actually use your vote most likely. Okay? I have five options. Vote for one. What do you think is the most likely? So, I think it's commutative. Distributive. Sorry, De Morgan's. Distributive. Identity. Double negation. Okay, we mostly like De Morgan's. Why? What is appealing about De Morgan's? Yeah?
It can change and stores.
It can change and stores. Why would I want to change and stores?
So that it will match your statements.
Yeah, so I want to match one of these things over here. I've got ands and ors over here depending where I pick, but I want to get some of them. There's another reason I would love to change either ands, ors, or vice versa. Because I think about my commutative property, so far it doesn't give me a lot of flexibility. So let me move the ands around, and inside them I can move them around, but I can't take this A and this not A and get them next to each other so something will simplify. But if they were all ors or all ands, I could move around inside of them. Wouldn't that be nice? And so maybe if I could turn my ands to ors, my ors to ands, I would get that power. Maybe. We can find out. So, De Morgan seems appealing to me. It seemed appealing to many of you. Distributive would be really cool. And so we could try that as well. Can I apply the distributive rule? I can. Distributive rule is particularly handy because it allows me to sort of change what is connected with what. And so I can apply the distributive rule. I could say, for example, I have something being ORed with an AND. And so I could distribute this over that. So I could try the distributive rule. I could try De Morgan's rule. In both cases, my goal is essentially to get some terms to cancel out. I want to get that A and not A next to each other so they can vanish. I don't know if they're trying to do a true or false, depending on whether they're ands or ors, but I want to get rid of them because I have too many terms. Okay? So let's try De Morgan. That seemed to be the most popular one. So I can either apply De Morgan to my outer ors or my inner ands. Let's just try them both. I'll pick an arbitrary term. Let's pick this term here. I want to De Morgan it. No, actually, this term can be De Morganed as is. How about that? I don't even need to add another not. So I'm just going to De Morgan that. So I'm going to apply De Morgan's law to that. And I'm going to end up with not A or B. And then everything else stays the same. Am I in a better position than I was before? Can I do any new things now that I've done this? I said one of the nice things about having ORs everywhere is that I could move things around. I could rearrange. But I can't do that because I've got this annoying knot keeping me from breaking up this OR. Ugh. And the only way to get rid of that knot is to use De Morgan's law, which puts me back in the AND. Ah! So I didn't actually gain power there. Is there any other new power I have gained? We could try De Morgan's in other places and see if it magically makes our lives better. But let's also try distributive. Okay, so we tried De Morgan's. Let's try the distributive property. So I've got two of these ORs that are I could choose to distribute over, and let's just arbitrarily, I don't know, let's work left to right. Okay? So I'm just going to try to distribute this over that. What does that look like? That looks like A and B, or not A. Sorry, and not A. No, it's the outer one, right? It's or, and then and, and then this thing with that. A and B, or B. And then I still have this other thing outside of it all. All right, now, this probably confused at least some of you in the room. Okay, which is fine. Let's go look at the distributive rule. Where do I have distributive? Here I have it. Note, the general form of distributive law, right, is if I have an AND on the outside and an OR on the inside, then I end up with ANDs in the insides and ORs in the outside, and vice versa. So what used to be on the outside becomes on the inside. What used to be on the inside becomes on the outside. And so the idea here was my outer term was an OR, so that has to become my inner term. Going forward. My inner term was an AND, so that becomes the outer term going forward. And I'm changing one of these parenthesized statements as just a value by itself, and the other one is the thing I'm distributing over. There's lots of ways of getting confused doing this, just as there was when we first learned how to foil things out in algebra. And if this is a little confusing to you, it might be worth just trying out several of these and seeing where it goes. I could get a lot messier if I didn't immediately distribute this over that. Okay? Which I'm not going to do just now because I want to try to proceed towards something useful before class ends, but might be worth trying to do to see if you can get it right. You can also check if you got it right because I still only have two terms, so it's still just a four-row truth table. Okay? So if this is feeling a little shaky, I would encourage you to try doing it, check your work using a truth table, do that several times until it becomes fairly straightforward.
All right, so I've done this distribution. Am I in a better place than I was before? Can I do anything internally to make my life easier? Well, I've got an and an or, and I don't yet have an easy ability to sort things out, so I'm just going to distribute again. I'm going to take this one, and I'm going to distribute it as well. Okay, so I'm going to distribute this to get A or not A, and B or not A. And all the rest of that hasn't changed. I'm going to leave the rest of that unchanged and see what else I can do here. A or not A is something that can simplify. It simplifies to? True, because it's an or. So now I have true and something. True and something simplifies. It simplifies to? The other thing. So I'm going to take all of this, and this just goes away. Ta-da! All right, so I've turned that piece into this. I can then try doing the same thing over here. I'm going to distribute this as well and see if magic will happen to make my life easier. So this is going to be A or B and B or B. And B or B simplifies to B. Okay, now I could keep going if I wanted. I could distribute it again, but I'll get stuck in a loop. Okay, all right, and then I still have this other term out here. So I'm starting to make progress. I've managed to throw something away. Let's take all of my random scatterings and try to combine them. What do I have so far? I have B or not A and A or B, and B. Oh, and all of that is still or, not A, and not B. Because that hasn't gone anywhere. Now, it is likely at this point you're saying, oh dear, we've done a lot of work, and we're still in a messy, ugly place. Okay? I'm just going to assert something because you haven't yet had the experience to discover it for yourself. As long as your messy, ugly places are not getting bigger and are not repeating, you are making progress. Okay? If you keep going, keep finding new things that are not bigger, eventually you'll exhaust all of the things that aren't bigger and find the thing you're looking for. Now, that is not an encouraging way of going. There are a lot of things that aren't bigger. But in particular, as we continue down this path, we'll get there. Now, you would say, but it is bigger. I started with fewer operators than I have now. I have this extra B in there. Oh, no. Yeah, okay. It's not a lot bigger. We haven't dramatically increased our size. We're still moving towards things. Just as this distribution here made it bigger, but then let us simplify a little bigger in between is fine. If you don't find yourself like adding something and adding something and adding something and adding something, and you don't find yourself retreading old ground, you're moving in the right direction. And how would we, yes?
I have a question. Could we inversely use distributive law?
Yes, we can factor as well as distributing.
So why don't factors use inversely use distributive law?
So how would that look? Yeah, so if I wanted to inversely distribute, how would I do that? I would say, ah, look, these things both have B's. Let's factor that out. Right? That would also be a strategy we could use. Yep. There isn't one right way to do this. There are multiple paths, because everything we're writing is equivalent to everything else we're writing. We're only using equivalence rules, so all of these are this equivalent to each other, and there are many more equivalent things too. So we could have factored, right? We could have distributed, but we could have factored. We put in the inverse of distributing as well. And there's actually multiple ways we could have done that. So there's lots of ways we could approach this. Okay. I realize this is likely to be unpopular, but in interest of time, I'm planning to just sort of pause here. I believe I have shown you enough that you can spend a little bit of time in a few sheets of paper
and get there. Now, this is larger than I expect to do in any sort of time scenario. It's part of why I got it, so you have enough opportunity to see what happens in a dead end. I thought about doing what our textbooks do and only show you things that work. And I thought, that's not educational, because most of the time it doesn't work. Remember, one of our very first principles we talked about as mathematicians is fail often. It's fine. We can do as many dead ends as we want. Eventually, we'll exhaust the dead ends and find the truth. I would encourage you to do that. Before we close, though, I do need to talk about this notation that is going to be useful, particularly when reading one of our textbooks, but also other times in your life. Did I already link it up? No, I didn't. Okay. Let me go to the list of symbols. And let's talk about this new bit I added at the end. Okay. We have used two of these symbols. I'm going to talk about the other two. I'm going to show that how they're used and try to make sure you understand what's going on. And then we're also going to talk about how this is horribly ugly and why did we ever do this. Okay, equivalent. Equivalent means the by implication is a tautology. It means when one is true, the other is true. When one is false, the other is false. But why don't we just use by implication? Turns out sometimes we want to describe a possible relationship. Maybe A by implication B is true, maybe it's false, I don't know. And sometimes I want to assert a relationship. I am telling you on my own authority that A is equivalent to B. Trust me, it is. Okay? We want to be able to do both kinds of things. We want to be able to talk about expressions and assert some things are true. And we have decided in mathematics to use different symbols for those. We similarly have different symbols for A could imply B and A does entail B. Okay? And often when we think about if-then statements in English, we're assuming whoever said it meant entailed. And they meant this is true. Okay? They didn't mean I'm talking about the idea it might be true. They were talking about it being true. So commonly we assume entailment. But logically, what does that mean? We can say it is a tautology, but on whose authority? If you didn't show me the proof, I don't believe it. Okay, in math. But this gets more complicated as we move forward. So we have this other thing. I should incidentally note, there are other names for these symbols. The equivalent symbol is sometimes called the hamburger. It's not a very common term in math, but shows up more when it's used to be a menu icon. The entailment symbol is sometimes called the double turnstile, and the provable symbol is called the turnstile, because somebody thought this is what the things that don't let you go backwards in subway systems in large cities look like. I don't know. Anyway. They all have names, who really cares? So, provable means almost what entails does. Almost. If I say A proves B, I mean A entails B and I know B is true because A is true. A could entail B even if B was false. Okay? So I could say, for example, I get stabbed in the heart, entails I die. I might believe this to be a true thing I'm willing to stake my life on, literally. But that doesn't mean I've ever been stabbed in the heart. Thank goodness, right? If I say, I stabbed in the heart proves I died, what I'm telling you is it entails it, and I know I'm dead because I know I was stabbed in the heart. Okay? I'm telling you there's a connotation of truth here. And so sometimes you'll even see it with nothing before it. You'll just say, proves B. Which just means, I know B is true. I'm not telling you how, I just know it. It's a thing I know. Wherever it came from. And then we have the triple dot. This is read therefore. So, therefore A is used when we write multi-line proofs to mean I am saying everything above this line proves this thing. And just like provable means, oh, and I also know it's true, the therefore means, oh, and also this is the thing I cared about. There's an implication, there's a statement of priority, of goal in therefore. In the readings, you'll see in particular, therefore used quite a lot in the for all textbook, provable used a few times in the mathematics or computer scientist book. So I wanted to teach them to you so your reading can be more fruitful. All right, I will post a practice quiz hopefully in the next few hours, and I will see you all on Friday.